Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Hello and welcome to Pro-Life Primetime News. Today is Friday, April 19th. I'm Leslie Palma. Our top story tonight takes us to Arizona, where a state Supreme Court decision allowing a law originally enacted in 1864 to once again protect most babies from abortion has dominated the political and cultural landscape. Jill Norgaard of Arizona Right to Life joins me to talk about where the state might be headed. When Democrats tried to bar former President Donald Trump's name from appearing on ballots in various states, they might not have realized the tables would be turned on their candidate. In political news in a nutshell, I'll report on why Joe Biden might be missing from ballots in Ohio and Alabama in November. Republicans in Kansas are vowing to override Governor Laura Kelly's veto last week of a bill that would make it a felony to coerce a woman to have an abortion. I'll report on that and more in Abortion in the News. April is Abortion Recovery Awareness Month, and I will be joined by Jessica Merdolo, a mom who aborted her baby after receiving a poor prenatal diagnosis and regretted that choice immediately. Jessica will talk about the healing she received through Rachel's Vineyard, a ministry of Priests for Life. Please stay tuned. 10 days ago, the Arizona Supreme Court upheld a law from 1864 that protects most babies from abortion. The state has been in the spotlight ever since. The law was enforced from 1864 until the U.S. Supreme Court's 1973 Roe v. Wade decision legalized abortion throughout the country. Prior to Roe, Planned Parenthood twice challenged the Arizona law, both times unsuccessfully. Since the court's ruling on April 9th, Republicans in the state legislature have twice blocked an effort by Democrats to repeal the bill. But some prominent Republicans, including former President Donald Trump and Carrie Lake, who's running for the U.S. Senate, feel the law, in Trump's words, went too far. The law could soon be enacted and begin saving lives. But in November, Arizona residents will vote on a proposed amendment that would invent a right to abortion in the state constitution, which could then overturn this law. So there's a lot going on in Arizona, and to help us make sense of it all, I'll be joined by Jill Norgaard, a former Arizona state representative and a member of the board of Arizona Right to Life. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Hey, good morning, Leslie.
So it's been an interesting 10 days. Were you expecting the Arizona Supreme Court to uphold the law?
Well, the Arizona Right to Life Board was delighted that the Arizona Supreme Court upheld Arizona's pro-life legacy. We've always been a pro-life state, and we are really thrilled that they upheld, and we're going to continue to laser focused on educating people about the issues of abortion and what it actually does. So we were really pleased with the results.
But are you disappointed that Trump and Carrie Lake spoke out against the law?
I was a little surprised. President Trump spoke at the pro-life, the national event a few years ago when he was president. He did a fantastic job. He is our pro-life candidate. He is going to win in November. And we have, no matter what we say on the right, the Republicans, we're always going to be framed as the radical right extremists because the left controls the narrative. We just have to stand right on the pro-life issues and continue to make our case.
That's true. So now there's efforts afoot to repeal the law. Do you think Democrats are going to keep trying?
I think they'll keep trying. Yesterday we were at the state capitol and they tried yesterday. And fortunately in the House, it got stopped. They tried the repeal yesterday on the House floor and that got stopped. So the thing is, there are people down there. We were down there. It was probably 8-1 as far as the pro-lifers versus the pro-abortion crowd down there. Mm-hmm. And we talked to people, and literally the pro-abortion people, they're mad because, literally, they're mad because we are out there trying to protect babies and save babies. Where have we come as a society? The right to life. Everyone has a right to be born. And people talk about women's rights and reproductive rights. What about the rights of 50% of those women that don't have an opportunity to be born and express their voice?
Yeah, exactly. So the stakes were already high surrounding the ballot initiative. Can you tell us what's happening on that front?
Sure. The ballot initiative, and I have a copy right here, It's worded extremely vague. It says every individual has a fundamental right to abortion, and the state shall not enact, adopt, or enforce any law, regulation, policy, or practice that does any of the following. And one is denies or interferes with an abortion after fetal viability. After fetal viability, literally, is abortion up to 9 months. And people are talking about, oh, it's before fetal viability. And no, it explicitly says after fetal viability. Also, it includes a treating healthcare professional. Again, very vague. What is a treating healthcare professional? A dentist, a doctor, someone who works in the office, a podiatrist. And they did that on purpose. Also, they included mental health of a pregnant individual. They didn't even say a pregnant woman. They said a pregnant individual. And what that does is it supersedes the Arizona state law, which protects minors. What this does is actually anyone can take a minor into an abortion clinic and have an abortion performed on that young girl without parental consent. It really absolutely eliminates any protections of ultrasounds or parental involvement with initiative. And so what our team is trying to do is educate people on this issue. They have circulators that are going around telling people, misleading people that this is women's rights, this is a reproductive issue. Can we at least be truthful about what the initiative states? And I'm not sure if the circulators even understand what exactly they are trying to get people to sign. A lot of them are petitioners who are flown in from out of state, and they're paid $20 to $25 an hour to get signatures for this initiative.
Wow. I know this is happening in a lot of states, so we are certainly keeping an eye on Arizona. And I know you, this is a very busy time for you, but you also have something exciting happening in your personal life.
Yes.
Can you tell me about your son?
So you guys are priests for life, and our son is hopefully going to be a priest for life. He's a Dominican in the Western Province in Oakland. So keep him in your prayers. He's out in the Berkeley area, and they're out there fighting the good fight. They're in the throes of all this activity out there, and we appreciate your prayers.
Absolutely. What's his name? Excuse me. What's his name?
Scott, Brother Scott Norgaard. So, okay. Yeah, keep him in your prayers. We're working together and trying to get the word out. Our Catholic community actually has been really great about our bishop and to not sign it. So kudos to him. The Catholic Church really needs to get involved in this. When we're working with the state of Ohio, their petition got voted down. So abortion is legal up to 9 months in Ohio now. So we're working with their team. And they said 50% of Catholics voted for the initiative to have abortion legal up to 9 months. We really need to get with our churches and our pastors and get the word out as far as what this initiative really does.
Absolutely. Well, I wish every blessing on you and your family and the unborn in Arizona. And thanks for making the time to come and join us. And please come back because this story will continue.
I'll keep you posted as long as you want to know. Okay.
Thanks so much. Good night. Kansas Governor Laura Kelly last week vetoed a bill that would make it a felony to coerce a woman into having an abortion and another bill seeking to understand why women in the state choose abortion. Kelly criticized the coercion bill for what she called its potential to intrude upon, quote, private, often difficult conversations between a person and their family, friends, and health care providers. The pro-abortion governor, a Democrat, also vetoed a bill banning so-called gender identity health care for young people in the state. Republicans dominate both the House and Senate in Kansas and have vowed to begin an override effort when they return to session a week from today. Planned Parenthood's latest annual report shows it killed 392,715 babies in 2022, more than ever before, and a 5% increase over the previous year. But Life News is reporting that the abortion giant also set another record, getting more of Americans' taxpayer dollars than ever, an astonishing $699.3 million. That figure represents an $81 million increase in revenue from when Biden took over the White House. U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville, an Alabama Republican, has introduced legislation called the VA Abortion Transparency Act of 2024, aiming to get a handle on how many abortions the Department of Veterans Affairs has performed and how much American taxpayers spent on them. In 2022, the Biden administration announced it would begin funding and performing abortions for veterans and their dependents through the VA. In October 2023, the VA reported that from September 9, 2022 to September 30, 2023, the agency facilitated 88 abortions. According to Tuberville's website, the agency has since refused to release updated data, despite multiple requests from Congress. The dating apps Tinder, Bumble, and Match have joined the chorus of other businesses in Idaho to complain that laws protecting babies from abortion are bad for their bottom line. The Idaho Statesman has reported that the dating apps and several other high-profile businesses and National Chamber of Commerce organizations have filed a joint amicus brief urging the U.S. Supreme Court to provide an emergency exception to an Idaho law protecting most babies from abortion. They argued that the laws have cost the state millions of dollars in lost economic opportunities. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in the case on Wednesday. If you need time off from your job to have an abortion, or if your new birth control pill is making you sick, just tell your boss and he or she has to accommodate you, after the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission this week published a final rule that includes abortion and contraceptive use in the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. The 2022 law requires U.S. employers with 15 or more employees to provide reasonable accommodations to pregnant workers, and now also to those using contraception and those who have had or are planning an abortion. Accommodations an abortion-minded employee might need include limits on heavy lifting, part-time work schedules, additional breaks to drink water and use restrooms, the opportunity to work from home, and paid or unpaid leave. EEOC, which received 96,000 public comments on the change, finalized the rule today, and it will be enforced in 60 days. And finally, a new study from the Pro-Life Charlotte Lozier Institute has found that abortion increases the risk of heart disease, the leading cause of death among women. Pregnancy Help News reported that the study, which examined medical records for more than a million Medicaid-eligible women between 1999 and 2014, found that in every case, women with a history of abortion or miscarriage had higher rates of cardiovascular disease following their first live birth compared to women with a similar cardio history but no past pregnancy loss. Dr. David Reardon, an author of the study, pointed out that the American Heart Association has long warned women of the link between miscarriage and heart disease. I hope that these numbers will motivate a similar warning on abortions, Reardon said. And that's abortion in the news. Republican-dominated legislatures in Ohio and Alabama may have the deciding vote on whether incumbent Joe Biden appears on the presidential ballot in November. Both states have deadlines for appearing on the ballot that fall before the August 19th Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Biden's campaign lawyers have asked both states to accept provisional certifications that would be updated once Biden clinches the party's nomination. But Alabama Secretary of State Wes Allen said he does not have the legal authority to do so, and Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose sent a letter to the Biden campaign suggesting the Democrats move up the date for the convention or secure a legislative fix before May 9th. This kind of ballot shenanigans had its start when Democrats tried to bar former President Donald Trump from various state ballots. Last month, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states can't bar a candidate for national office, but it appears Ohio and Alabama are giving it a shot anyway. Independent candidate Robert Kennedy Jr. is having ballot troubles of his own. On Saturday, Kennedy organized a convention in Iowa that needed at least 500 eligible voters representing 25 counties to show up. The convention chairman announced at the closing that 686 voters from 35 counties were in attendance, although that figure has not yet been verified. Kennedy is working to get his name and that of running mate Nicole Shanahan on ballots for all 50 states. So far, only Utah has confirmed that Kennedy will be on the ballot. Both Trump and Biden are concerned that Kennedy could siphon enough votes from their tickets to let the other guy win. 12 news organizations are appealing to Biden and Trump to face each other on the debate stage in the run-up to the highly contested November elections. The organizations, including Fox News, CNN, and all three major networks, said debates are part of a rich tradition that have featured prominently in presidential elections since 1976. Trump is willing to debate, but Biden has not committed to facing his challenger head-on. The race for control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court is on again, with the most liberal justice, Ann Walsh Bradley, announcing last week that she would not run for re-election in the spring. It's possible that conservatives can regain the advantage they lost last year when the most expensive judicial race in history tilted the ideological balance on the court 4-3 in favor of liberals. This year, the court could decide whether abortion remains legal in one of the country's most closely watched presidential battlegrounds. The court has been asked to review a law from 1849 that pro-lifers believe protects most babies from abortion, but that abortion advocates say applies only to feticide, which is, by definition, abortion. U.S. Senator Pete Ricketts from Nebraska, a former governor, has donated $500,000 to an effort to get the pro-life Protect Women and Children ballot initiative in front of voters in November. Organizers have until July 3rd to collect 123 valid signatures for the referendum that would protect babies from abortion after the first trimester. Abortion advocates in the state are also collecting signatures for a separate referendum that would ask Nebraskans to invent a right to abortion in their state constitution. And that's political news in a nutshell. April is Abortion Recovery Awareness Month, when pro-life and healing ministries across the country highlight the fact that though abortion wounds women, men, and families, healing is available. The largest program in the world for healing after abortion is Rachel's Vineyard, a ministry of Priests for Life. Rachel's Vineyard offers weekend retreats as well as individual follow-up. Since its founding in 1994 by Dr. Teresa Karminsky Burke and Kevin Burke, the program has grown to offer more than 1,000 retreats annually across 49 states and 70 countries. This weekend alone, there will be 22 retreats in places as far-flung as Russia, Malaysia, Slovenia, Mexico, New Zealand, Poland, and in 10 U.S. states. This evening, I'm being joined by Jessica Merdolo, a woman who found healing at Rachel's Vineyard after a poor prenatal diagnosis led to an abortion for her very wanted second child. Welcome to the show, Jessica, and thank you for being willing to share your story.
Good evening. Thank you for having me, Leslie.
So, Jessica, tell us about the circumstances that led to the abortion.
So we were pregnant with our second child. We had already had a beautiful daughter, and she was diagnosed with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. On top of having the heart syndrome, she had some complications on top of that, which did not make her a candidate for the three palliative care operations that are available. There is no cure. It's just palliative care until hopefully a heart transplant. And at the time that, you know, the children did not live very long, the diagnosis was not very good. And we were given three options by the children's hospital we were at. We were told our first option was that we could abort. The second option was that we could attempt the palliative care surgeries, of which the surgeon said she was not a good candidate for. And the third option would be to bring her to term and to give her palliative care at that time and allow her to pass on her own, also known as perinatal hospice. We really thought about it, and we did not want to subject her to the surgeries, thinking if she's not a good candidate, they're going to take her straight from the womb to have the surgeries. And she wasn't going to survive. So my husband and I wanted to bring her to term and provide her with perinatal hospice. The children's hospital we were at told us that because they had surgery available to them, that they would not do perinatal hospice in our situation. We had to go to a different hospital. And we called every hospital in the area that we could think of, that we knew of, and we were told we had to be at a children's hospital. So there was this tiny little loophole where, because of surgery, there was no perinatal hospice available at a children's hospital. And at a regular hospital, we had to be at a children's hospital to have perinatal hospice for an infant, a newborn. I also knew from my first child that I couldn't deliver naturally. I had to be given a C-section, and every hospital that we had gone to turned us down and did not allow us to deliver her. And at that time, unfortunately, we didn't have anyone around us who knew that there were doctors who would deliver, that there were hospitals and places where we could offer her perinatal hospice. And everyone around us just said, well, you have to do this, you have to. And that ultimately became the choice that we feel like we were forced into because we didn't have anything else available to us.
Well, it's very, very sad how they deal with women and couples in situations like this. So how soon after the abortion did you begin to feel feelings of regret?
Immediately. I remember arriving at the hospital that morning and sitting in that bed being prepped. And I looked at my husband and I said, I do not want to be here. I do not want to do this. And the nurse prepping me said, oh, honey, no one wants to be here, but you have to. And I remember waking up, just those moments where you're starting to come to before you even realize your body or your environment. I remember just saying her name and wondering where she was. And I heard a voice, which I later found out to be my husband's voice, that said, was she a very good girl? And I said, yes, she was. And he said, well, then she's in heaven with God. And just a crushing pain in that moment, a weight on my chest that I felt would never be lifted, knowing what I had done. So immediately.
Wow. So what led you to Rachel's Vineyard, and what was that experience like?
I actually was led there by a doctor that I went to see. That, you know, they do the intake and they say, oh, how many times have you been pregnant? How many live births, C-sections? And of course, I had to list that I had an abortion, and having to explain that to someone, putting my head on her desk and sobbing. And she said, have you ever heard of Rachel's Vineyard? And I had not. And she said, well, why don't you look into it? And she handed me a brochure and a card. And I have to say, I reached out and immediately recoiled and thought, I can't do this. But the team at Rachel's Vineyard over in Malvern kept calling, kept emailing, kept pursuing. And I eventually went.
And tell us a little bit about the weekend. What's that like, the retreat?
To be honest, it's terrifying the moment you get there. I pulled up in my car and I sat there and I thought, I'm just going to go home. I can't do this. And there was a woman waiting by the door, and she opened the door and she said, hello, do you need some help with your bags? And I thought, no, that's okay. And I grabbed them, and she walked me inside. She walked me up to my room, and I thought to myself, okay, well, when she leaves and I settle myself into my room, I'll just go. And she said, well, I'll wait for you. And she walked me down into the room, and it was rather terrifying to see all of these women. And they all had that same frightened look that I must have had on my face. And the team is very solemn because they know how we're coming in. They also know how we're going to leave. So they're very solemn with us as well. And it was hard because you go through every moment of it. You tell your story. Each woman has an opportunity to share their story, to tell them what led them to their abortion, what led them to come to Rachel's Vineyard. And it's very emotional. It's very deep. And you start realizing as you're telling your story, really for the first time, in many instances, and you're a little bit removed from the time when it happened, you have realizations of emotions you didn't know you have, feelings deep inside that you don't realize. And all of that comes out, and you get to almost this very deep, dark place where you have to face all of those things. But then the work that the team puts you through, the exercises, the living scriptures, they break all of that open. And in that breaking, in those cracks, you see the light of God, and it just comes in to those deep, dark, hurting places, and it heals. And you hear often, I make all things new. And in those moments, you can feel it. You can feel that breaking apart. You can feel that light coming inside of you. You can feel God's love and God's mercy and this crushing pain that I woke up with from my abortion that I thought would never leave me, that would just sit on my chest like bricks for the rest of my life, just being taken away. And so leaving on Sunday afternoon is very different than showing up on Friday. You leave with a sense of new life, a sense of hope, a sense of I can move forward from here and grow and live my life.
Really how soon after the abortion did you do the retreat?
It was quite a few years. I think I went March of 2022, and my abortion was in 2010.
Oh, all right. So it was a while. You lived with that crushing pain for quite a while.
Yeah, for a really long time.
So would you recommend a retreat for other people who are feeling regret after abortion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to be quite honest, I don't think I had very much faith when I went. I don't know that I really believed in God when I signed up to go. And there's no doubt in my mind that God exists. There's no doubt in my mind that God has mercy for everyone, that God loves everyone, that we are here because he loves us and for a purpose and for him. And he just wants you to know that. He wants you to feel that. He wants you to experience his mercy and his love. And so yes, 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 and yes.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I know you did a longer interview with Teresa Burke, so I'm going to post a link to that video on our X page at Pro Life News Show. You have a powerful witness that needs to be heard. So God bless you and your family.
Thank you. God bless you. Thank you for having me.
Good night. Thank you so much for joining us on Pro Life Primetime News, produced at Priest for Life headquarters in Titusville, Florida. If you like this show, please consider making a donation to prolifegift.org. These donations help fund all of our work here at Priest for Life, which enables us to continue educating, equipping, and activating God's people to end abortion. For all your pro-life news updates during the week, please follow us on X at Pro-Life News Show. I'm Leslie Palma, Communications Director. Remember, life is the only choice.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.